If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
The Border Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services, locally owned and operated, and HLAC certified, meeting the highest industry standards. Walker has partnerships with hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in and around the metro area. Walker Medical Linen Services in Kansas City and online at walkermls.com.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you so much for joining us. Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati, now joined by our college football analyst who has been with us for many years, and he's back again for another year. Very happy to have Coach Gary Barnett with us again. Coach, good morning. How are you?
I'm well, Stephen. It's good to get this thing rolling again, huh? It's the best time of the year.
You know, we're getting fired up. We got the Chiefs' first preseason game on Saturday, and college football talk, like you said, that's starting to ramp up. And it's great timing because last night Eli Drinkwitz announced his starting quarterback, and they posted it on Twitter and then sent out a press release and said they have decided on, or he has decided on, Brady Cook, who we saw last year start the bowl game against Army, and I thought had a pretty good game. Threw for over 230 yards, ran for another 50, threw a touchdown, ran a touchdown, had that bad overthrow on the two-point conversion, but I was impressed with his running ability and his accuracy. Now, they like to go downfield a little bit more, especially with Luther Burden and some better weapons at wide receiver, but I'm just curious, after bringing in Jack Abraham, the 25-year-old transfer, and you got a true freshman in Sam Horn, and then another kid that was there last year, Tyler Macon, what did you think of the timing and of the decision to name Brady Cook the starting quarterback for Mizzou?
Well, I think every coach would like to have that kind of timing. They'd like to be able to name the quarterback and get it going. And so everybody can start slotting into their positions and realizing what the role is. So in some ways, you'd like to have two guys battling out to the end in theory. But I think sometimes as a coach, and there's an argument for both, really is. But I think sometimes, especially if it's as obvious as this must be, because I don't think you do it unless it's obvious. And, of course, that was the bowl game for Brady Cook was just, a great audition for this position. And so he has that in the books already. And so, I think it's a positive. I think it can be a positive for everybody on the football team. It just depends on how you choose to look at it. But in this particular case, I think it has to be pretty there must not have been a big decision that had to be made for him to make it this early.
I think, at least me, I watched that game and I was impressed. I thought, okay, and I actually, why didn't they go to this kid earlier? Because clearly Bazalack wasn't 100% as far as running the football, and that option really wasn't there. And then all of a sudden, Cook starts and he showed some explosion. He had some ability to hurt you with his legs. And so then in the offseason, I thought, okay, even though they lost that game, I thought there was something to build on. And really, Coach, you know this, he drove down the field and threw a go-ahead touchdown pass with a minute left. If Mizzou's defense holds on, we're talking about, man, what a great clutch drive by Brady Cook, and he won the game with a touchdown pass. They didn't because Army won it with a field goal. But I was a little confused, why he wasn't going to be the guy. And I think most people saw Drinkwitz flirt with every, damn near every transfer quarterback, and there was three or four guys that they had in visits, and they thought, okay, this is going to be the guy. And then finally, he landed this Jack Abraham. It just seemed like he was dead set on getting a guy out of the transfer portal. But then finally he said, you know, I wanted a guy to come in here, a veteran, to battle Brady Cook. What did you think of that process? Because it was very open, going after several transfer quarterbacks before landing on Jack Abraham. What did you think about, you know, the way he went about this, and Brady Cook there finally ends up winning the job?
Well, the optics, I think, are strange, but, you know, just to the outside and everybody on the outside, I think everybody sort of saw it the way you saw it. You never know. You don't know what's going on in those rooms. You don't know, you know, in some ways, in order to get a transfer quarterback, you've got to at least sit out there and say, okay, this position is wide open. You know, we have a guy that played one great game at the end of the year last year, but his body of work isn't such that we're comfortable with just having him there and a freshman. So, anymore, you gotta create a roster that's sustainable and that can provide some depth. And to me, that may be what Eli was doing. In order to get Jack Abraham, you've almost got to say, this spot's open. Come in here and give it a shot. You're 25, all that experience, come give it a shot. And then as a result, if it doesn't work out, then you are the key guy. And every quarterback knows and every coach knows that you're going to end up at some point in time playing a different quarterback during the year than maybe you thought you were going to play at the beginning. So the players now just have to buy into that, got to understand. And, you know, you have to handle that very, you know, delicately as a coach. But, you know, Eli's been around. This isn't his first rodeo. So, and the players seem to trust him a lot. So I think it'll probably work out just fine. But I think it has to have been overwhelming that they name Cook right away.
Well, now we know who the quarterback's going to be for that first game, a Thursday night game, September 1st, to open the season, a night game on ESPNU against Louisiana Tech, and then they'll have some extra time to get ready for their next game at Kansas State. And after that, Abilene Christian, and then at Auburn. So it's a hell of a start to the year. Year three for Eli Drinkwitz. What are your expectations for Drinkwitz in year three?
Well, I'm looking at the schedule right now, and you know, the K-State game is going to be a huge game for them to see where they are, because Kansas State's going to be pretty good. They're going to be really good with Adrian Martinez. If he can, you know, cure his turnover woes, that's going to be a heck of a football team right there. So I look at that game and I think, man, is this critical? Of course, the Louisiana Tech game is critical, and that's a good football team. So, you know, I look at their schedule, And it's a long road. I mean, you've got Tennessee, you got Kentucky. Both those two teams have rebounded and become very good football teams. Arkansas, all of a sudden, is the darling of the SEC. You've got Vanderbilt, which you never know. Second year with Clark Lee, anything can happen. Florida's on the rebound. Georgia's a national champion. And Auburn, everybody expects them to change coaches, but I don't know. You know, players rise up and all of a sudden defend their coach and you got a different situation. So I think they've got a heck of a difficult schedule going in, including the opening game. So expectations, I don't know. But I think that's part of why they named Brady Cook right now as the quarterback, is to get ready for this schedule.
Well, let's talk about the quarterback at K-State now. Martinez, the transfer from Nebraska, and I know K-State fans are very excited about the upside that he has. I've heard from Nebraska fans that say, oh, wait till he starts making mistakes. When he tries to make big plays, they won't love him so much anymore. I'm curious what your expectations are for him going into this season.
Well, I can tell you, I saw him in his first start ever, or one of his first starts ever, and I thought this kid was going to win the Heisman Trophy. I mean, he was so good. And then I watched him through the years, and Colorado played him 2 years in a row, and then I do a radio show in Lincoln, so I stay up on that team pretty closely. And of course the fans were all over him and et cetera, but from a coach's standpoint, somebody who's watched football a lot, he is a dynamic, really good football player. And a change of scenery for him is probably just what he needed. Can he not make the mistakes that he's made in the past? I don't know, but I think he's got better players around him now at Kansas State than he had at Nebraska. You know, and that's funny. 20 years ago, you could have never said that, but you can now. And, and he's going into an environment where they're welcoming me, and he's leaving an environment where they're mad at him. So I think it's just it creates a great opportunity for that kid and for Kansas State. But I think he is one heck of a football player. He is really talented.
Hey, Coach, when you have a talented quarterback that has been bit by mistakes and that kind of has that reputation of, he can do a lot of things, but he'll if you put some pressure on him or in a big situation, he's prone to turning the ball over and making a mistake. How do you coach a guy like that? How do you coach that out of him?
Well, the only way you can do it is if he's willing to have it coached out of him. I mean, he's the one that has to walk in and tell you, hey, coach, yes, I'm talented. Yes, I can run. Yes, I can do all these things. I'm one of these games. But you know what? Here's where I need to improve, and this is where I want you to help me. So if he takes that attitude into it, and I have no doubt that he will, I mean, I just think athletes, elite athletes like that, do want to be coached, and they do want to be good, and they want to be good at every piece of it, every part of it. So, but you know, if he doesn't have that attitude, then you're probably not going to get it out of him. So it really depends on the player, not so much the coach, is how to coach him. It's how the player approaches it.
We're visiting with Gary Barnett, and Coach, to transition over to Kansas now, we get to go into year number two of the Lance Leipold era. I felt like there were a lot of really encouraging signs about the direction of the program in his first year, but he didn't get to take that job until the very end of April last year. And we had him on the show last week, and I asked him about the benefit of actually getting an entire spring and having that year under their belt now compared to coming in so late with the timing of the way everything worked out last year. And he said at this time last year, they couldn't even really work on installing offense or defense because they were just trying to evaluate the players that they had, who can do what and how should we line up and all those types of things. I'm curious how big of a difference do you think that will make for him and his staff to have a grasp of their team, have some of their offense and defense installed compared to where they were at this time last year?
Well, you've heard me say a lot of times, Nate, that the hardest year is the second year.
Yep, many times,
and
yeah.
It usually holds up. You can't really count, I would agree, looking at Lance's situation, that when he got in there late in the spring, you really can't hardly even count year one as year one. But because you are starting from the very bottom. And I think he knew that going in, and I think Kansas knew that going in. So I'm going to say to you that I agree with him a whole lot. I wouldn't count this as his second year as I go in and assess this year with Kansas. But you're just glad to get that year over as a coach. You know, I had a similar situation, and you're just glad to get it over with, so that you can – all of a sudden you're going to play with more of your players. You're going to have coaches and kids that are used to each other. It's just it's a lot easier. Now, they've still got a very difficult schedule as well. I mean, they pick up Houston, Duke with a new coach. That's going to be interesting. You know, Tennessee Tech is never easy. That is a really good program at that level. So then their last five games are just brutal. Last six, they got OU, Baylor, Oklahoma State, Texas Tech, Texas, and Kansas State. So, you know, they've got a long, hard road. But, I look, just because of his history, I look for them to make progress this year.
Well, one of the things that I think Kansas fans are hoping will help him make progress is that it looks like they actually have a quarterback for the first time in over a decade. They decided at the end of the year last year to pull the red shirt on Jalen Daniels, And he went out and actually put up some decent numbers, especially by comparison to what Kansas has had over the past decade. He completed 69% of his passes. He threw for 860 yards, 7 touchdowns, and 3 interceptions. Had that win over Texas. And I'm curious for you, like, how big is the challenge from just doing that for 3 or 4 games at the end of the year for him coming into this season expecting to be the guy? Is that a tough thing for a quarterback, or what should expectations be like for KU fans there?
Well, you know, that sophomore year and that sophomore jinx is out there and can be out there. But, again, it's going to come down to the player. You know, how much does the player realize that he's not at the top of the mountain, how much he needs to work on and things he needs to do, and he still needs to win a football team over. I think it settles down, you know, everybody on the outside. But on the inside, you still got to put stress on players, and stress produces growth and improvement. So that all that's got to happen, and he's got to put it on himself. So it's how much you can do as a coach, but just as much and just as important, and maybe more importantly, is just how much do you want to do as a player?
We have Gary Barnett on the line. All right, Coach, before I ask you about the Pac-12, the Chiefs moved up in the first round and took a corner from Washington, Trent McDuffie. You have any comments or thoughts on Trent McDuffie? Because looks like he's going to be in the starting lineup day one, and the Chiefs thought enough of him to move up in that first round.
Well, I think with McDuffie, you just got to look at his physical skills, because he was not on a good football team. Even though that program through the years has been, you know, it's really been one of the top three out there in that conference, but they were not a very good football team. And, you know, I didn't really isolate on him very much as we did the game with him. But if you're going to move up and take a guy from a team like that, he's got to have unusual talents. And you just got to go with it and believe in the system that has found him, identified him, and now drafted him. So I don't know what to tell you other than that.
Well, tell me about USC and UCLA going to the Big Ten.
Well, in retrospect, no one saw it coming, but we all should have seen it coming. I mean, when you look out there and you think you're trying to expand, and if somebody said, okay, there's going to be some expansion, what do you think might happen? Then you might have concentrated on where would the Big Ten go, what makes sense for them. And I think if you had time to think that through, you would probably say, boy, if they go to L.A. and they get those two schools, it opens up recruiting for the Big Ten even more so than it's ever been. And, you know, the TV viewership and the TV package, and let's forget about the travel, but it makes sense. But none of us saw that coming. I mean, I was talking with Jerry DiNardo on the Big Ten Network. We were having dinner a week before this happened. And then it happens. And I called Jerry and I said, Jerry, did you know this was going to happen when we had dinner? He said, no idea. So they did a great job of keeping this under wraps. Now, I think it was all orchestrated by UCLA, that the AD, the chancellor, have a history with Ohio State, Gene Smith. So I think it's the feeling out on the West Coast that UCLA really organized this, not SC. And they brought SC with them. So it's going to be interesting. Now, what, you know, the other thing we failed to realize is that things aren't going to change out here on this conference for 2 years. And so, you know, they're talking about who we're going to go get. Are we going to go get somebody? What's going to happen? And I think the Pac-12 is just going to settle in at least for a year before they do anything, and see how this whole thing feels and what shakes out with all the TV packages. You know, if they get a TV package that's very attractive, then they may expand and be able to pick somebody up. There's also, I'll just give you this, there's just a hair of a chance that I think UCLA could renege on this deal, but just a small chance, because there's all sorts of blowback from the non-revenue sports and the athletes in L.A. about this. So, and there's some issues around how it was done, because the Regents did not have to give approval for this move, but the same Regents are over Cal Berkeley and UCLA. So this thing's still up in the air a little bit, and there's a lot of smoke to clear, so about anything can happen. So if you want to add to some of the conspiracy theories, you might throw that one out there.
If the Pac-12 did decide to expand and they asked you, who should we go get, what would your answer be?
The logical answer is you go get Boise, you get San Diego State, you get Fresno State. You might even pick up Utah State because you're already there. Those are all proven teams in the group of five. The issue is, in those cases, that the Pac-12 has an academic reputation that the chancellors may not allow that to happen. I think that was an issue back when they were talking about picking up Texas and Oklahoma back, if you remember, when was that, whatever year that was, and Oklahoma State and Texas Tech were demanding that they'd be able to go with them because of the Regents. So, but they weren't allowed in. They didn't pick them up, I think, because of the academic influences in the Pac-12. So, does that still exist? I don't know. I don't think it probably does, because there's just too much money involved. But to me, those are the schools you go expand to. I still think there is a possibility of an ACC Pac-12 combination. I think that's out there that I don't think a lot of people know about. But I think that one is always a possibility.
Coach Gary Barnett has been our guest. Coach, always glad to have you on the show, and look forward to talking to you every week this season.
Yeah, I can't wait to get it going, guys. It's been fun.
Let's get these games started. Coach, thanks for the time.
All right. Bye, fellas.
That is Coach Gary Barnett, the Border Patrol's college football analyst. When we come back to talk to Gabe DeArmond about Eli Drinkwitz selecting Brady Cook to be the starting quarterback at Mizzou football, back into this on WHB. Arturo Thundergatti. But instead, let's talk to Gabe Thunder DeArmond from PowerMizzou.com. Hello, Gabe.
What's up, guys? How you doing?
Oh, we're doing good. And Eli Drinkwitz finally named his starting quarterback Brady Cook. What was your reaction to the announcement last night?
I wasn't surprised that it was Cook after what I'd been kind of hearing out of camp. Was a little surprised it happened as soon as it did. And just kind of with, hey, randomly, here's an email at 7:30 on a Tuesday night. but, you know, it caught me off guard. But Cook is the guy really since at least the first couple days of camp that I'd kind of been hearing, hey, that's probably who it's going to be.
So this is what, you know, it was interesting how this all played out in the offseason because, yeah. You know, watching the bowl game, I was impressed by Brady Cook. I was especially impressed with the way he ran the football. I wasn't really expecting that. I thought he had a good game. I thought that missed two-point conversion kind of stuck with a lot of people. But then when I saw how aggressive Eli Drinkwitz was in trying to bring in a veteran transfer, it just appeared to me that, okay, he doesn't want Brady Cook to be the starting quarterback. And he's seen him in practice. He's evaluated with, you know, with his standards, and he wants anybody but, because they went after a lot of transfer quarterbacks before finally landing Jake Jack Abraham. I think some people thought, well, it's going to be Abraham because he sure wanted to transfer, but then he ended up with Brady Cook. Is it because Abraham wasn't as good as he expected? Was he really actually just trying to find some veteran competition for Brady Cook? What do you think went on behind the scenes?
I think it's a little bit of everything, right? Everybody wants it. It has to be, in this day and age, especially on the internet, for everyone, it has to be either he hated everyone in his room and was never going to start them, or he always just wanted a backup. Neither one of those things is true. I believe coming out of last season, even after the bowl game, Eli Drinkwitz was not sure he had an SEC start, a good SEC starting quarterback on his roster. And let's be honest, guys, he's still not sure because Brady Cook has started one game. So nobody's positive about that. He went out and he chased a bunch of dudes. I mean, three of them visited and more were contacted. They contacted Spencer Rattler. They contacted Casey Thompson. You know, they looked at a bunch of guys. Now, just because the transfer they got didn't end up winning the starting job doesn't mean he wasn't recruiting a starter. You are just being willfully ignorant if you think Jalen Daniels would not have been the favorite to start here. JT Daniels would have been the favorite to start here. Jerry Bohannon probably still would have been the favorite to start here, although it might have been a little closer. The guy they ended up with, I mean, let's be honest, guys, it was a seventh-year transfer that had not played at a high major level that, yes, there was a chance he was going to be the starter, but it was much less certain than it would have been with some of the other guys. So, you know, and I understand the way Missouri will present it, and I even understand why Missouri fans want to pretend that it's true, that Eli never wanted to do anything more than bring in a third-string guy or a guy just in case Sam Horn went pro. But if that was the case, he would have been looking at this level guy from the beginning, and he wasn't. I mean, you know, people say, well, he wouldn't guarantee them the starting job. Well, I agree with that. Very rarely are recruits promised starting jobs, because what happens if that guy shows up and he's out of shape or he's not good enough or whatever, or some other guy just got better? You know, that's the thing we're not talking about here. What if Brady Cook worked really hard and he's a better player than he was in December? But very rarely do coaches go to recruits and say, I guarantee you're starting day one if you come here. Now, they, you know, but again, Daniels, both Daniels, and maybe even Bohannon, the expectation had they come here would have been that they were going to win the starting job. Not a guarantee it would have happened, but they would have been favored. That doesn't mean Brady Cook can't be good. Again, maybe he I was impressed with him, too, in the bowl game. I thought he deserved a shot during the season last year. Every time I've seen Brady Cook on the field, all he's done is pretty much what he was asked to do. So we'll see. Better or worse, he's the starter now.
So tell Mizzou fans what they need to know about Brady Cook, you know, how he ended up at Mizzou, and maybe, you know, what you've learned about him. I know you've had a chance to interview him and you've covered him. So tell us about the new Mizzou starting quarterback.
I mean, he is a kid that is incredibly easy to root for Missouri fans. I asked him just flat out on the day before camp started. I said, given what's going on around college football, you definitely could have left when your coach was out looking at transfer. So why didn't you? And he said, because this is where I always wanted to go. I want to be great at Missouri. And so I wanted to, this is my shot, and I'm going to take it, and I plan to make it work. I mean, that's what every fan wants to hear, right? We look at these kids, and fans want to think that their school means as much to the player as it does to the fan. Usually that's not true. Usually, hey, this is the place that I had the best chance to play football. Doesn't mean some guys don't end up loving it, and it doesn't, you know, they go on and they donate later in life, and they become great ambassadors for their university. But most of them don't come here because, hey, I just grew up loving the University of Missouri. Brady Cook did, and so I think that a lot of fans can really get behind that. He's a really good interview. Really nice kid. I mean, this doesn't matter to very many people, probably nobody but like me and the other guys that cover the team. But when you're at a recruiting camp, when you're at an event and Missouri football players are there, Brady Cook, without exception, will come over and shake your hand and say, hey, how you doing? Good to see you. And he's really the only one that does that. There aren't very many other kids that probably even know who a lot of us are, you know. And does that mean he's a better player? None of that. Just he's an easy kid to root for.
Okay, Gabe, so outsider's perspective, 30,000-foot view, whatever, I see a quarterback who, from what I saw in the bowl game, brings the added dimension of being able to add some athleticism, run a little bit. I also see losing one of the better running backs in the entire country from last year, and I see one of the most talented young wide receivers coming in. Is this offense going to look very, very different from the one that we saw last year when you consider all those things?
I mean, that's the hope, right? And I know Eli said it when he was on with you guys a couple weeks ago, and he's reiterated it since, that he went into a shell following, you know, the Vanderbilt game where they kind of almost blew it. He just started coaching not to lose, really. And, you know, somebody could write a book if they could get people to be honest about what happened with Drinkwitz and Faislak in the second half of last year. And I don't know. I'm just saying it would be really interesting to know. But, yeah, this thing has to look different because you've got Dominic Lovett. You've got Mookie Cooper. Chance Looper has shown some things. You've got Luther Burden coming in. And, you know, the thing that nobody really wants to talk about, but you have to talk about, we know what this day and age of college football is, and we know the options Luther Burden had last year. And we know the people that are going to be on the phone with Luther Burden and his people if midway through the season he has 9 catches, right? I mean, those calls are going to start if he's not being super productive and Missouri doesn't have a great passing game. So that's part of it. And the running from the quarterback position is really the big thing. I mean, and the kind of fair warning is last year I directly asked Connor Bazelak, like, you didn't really run much last year. How much of it was your knee, blah, blah. And he said, yeah, I'm feeling 100% healthy, 100% confident. The running is definitely going to be more of a part of it. It has to be, and it just wasn't, you know. So Cook is more mobile, more athletic than Bazelak was, so you would certainly expect that to be a part of it as well. It definitely was when Brady played last year. He ran for 50-some-odd yards in the bowl game. But I think that dimension of the offense is something that can help everything out, because when you don't have to account for the quarterback being able to take off, I mean, offenses just become so much easier to defend.
Gabe DeArmond from PowerMizzou.com is our guest. So when Drinkwitz took the job, I think most people's perception was, okay, this guy, he's an offensive coach. He's got a great offensive mind. He's going to come in here. And what did Gary Pinkel always say? I'm always going to have a quarterback. I'm always going to get a quarterback. So, I mean, you're assuming, okay, since he's an offensive guy, he's going to go out and he's going to get a quarterback, and then, you know, we'll see what he does with the defense. But offensively, this is going to be fun to watch. And I know that everyone's looking at Sam Horn as the next guy, and he hasn't been there long enough to really compete for the job. But is there any concern, considering now we're in year 3, and this is a quarterback Barry Odom brought to Mizzou? He hasn't recruited a quarterback that's good enough to be the starter yet.
If you're being honest, there should be, you know. And I don't know if concern is the right word, but at least awareness. I mean, Drinkwitz was brought in, like you said, the offense, the quarterback were things that's the reasons he was hired. If you look at it, year 1, he went with the wrong guy. I mean, he corrected it pretty early, but he chose the wrong starting quarterback out of fall camp. And then year 2, Connor Bazelak went backwards for whatever reason. He wasn't as good as he was the year before. And now year 3, like you said, I mean, hey, Brady Cook's the guy that's been here the whole time and was recruited under the previous staff. And now, again, that's going to sound like a knock on Brady, and it's not. If he's the best quarterback, great, play him and see how good he is. But, yeah, that's a question mark. And then the other question mark, I think, is, hey, he's an offensive guy, so he's going to hire a defensive coordinator that probably has an outside, you know, has more influence than a lot of defensive coordinators do, and he's on his 3rd one in 3 years. So those are the two things that I think you point to and say, this is why you don't yet know how this is going to go. Like, Drinkwitz has to provide – positive answers to those two questions, and at least one of the two this year, to for people to feel good going forward?
Well, I can tell you from experience, Gabe, that having a rotating door in your coaching staff is not usually healthy. It's hard to build something when you're changing coaches every year, and it's not the head coach, but having a different defensive coordinator 3 years in a row, that is tough. What are the expectations? Yeah. What are fair expectations for the defense this year?
Being better, because it's hard to see it being worse. Look, they brought in a ton of transfers. I mean, they're going to have one starter on the defensive line, one starter at linebacker, and one starter at safety that are transfers, at least. They're going to have some key backups that are transfers. They're going to have a new defensive coordinator. They're going to have Martez Manuel playing a little different position than he was last year. And I did a story yesterday. I think the key is linebacker. I think that's the position that most needs to improve for Missouri from last year. And I went back and looked. If you look at their first five games, they give up 306 yards a game rushing and 6.1 something a carry. In their last five games, they gave up, I think it was about 130 yards a game and 3.9 a carry or something like that. I don't know if those numbers are exactly right, but they're close. And the common denominator there, Chad Bailey played 60 snaps total at linebacker in the first five games. He averaged 60 snaps in the last five games. Now, I'm not saying that Chad Bailey alone is a miracle worker and fixed the Missouri defense, but the Missouri defense started playing a lot better when he was on the field, and he's going to start along with Tyron Hopper at linebacker this year. So I think there's hope, and I don't think Missouri has to have like a top 20 defense. I think most fans would be satisfied if it was, you know, kind of average Power 5 defense, be somewhere there in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and that at least gives you a shot to be competitive, because you went 6-6 last year with a defense that was legitimately the worst in Power 5 football for about two-thirds of the year.
Gabe, final question for you, and this is about Luther Burden III. I keep trying to keep myself and other Mizzou people that I talk to at least keep the expectations reasonable, but ESPN keeps generating these freaking articles now today. It's the ranking college football's instant impact newcomers, the top 50 transfers and freshmen, and Luther Burden's number 32. And so then, you know, it's just, hey, we're not creating that. That's out there, and we saw what he did in high school, but there is a danger to expect him. I saw some numbers you put out there that it's kind of rare for a freshman wide receiver to come in and put up big numbers.
Right, and I look at it, and I think if Luther Burden could catch 50 balls for 600 yards and 6 touchdowns, that's a really good freshman year. And I kind of get the feeling Missouri fans would look at that and say, well, that's kind of disappointing. No, that would have led Missouri in receiving the last 4 years, you know, as a true freshman. The best freshman wide receivers here, I mean, Denaro Alexander got hurt, so I'm not sure that counts. But I'm talking true freshmen, so Macklin doesn't count. But Doriel Green Beckham was the number one player in the country at 28 catches for 400 yards and 4 touchdowns as a freshman. Chase Kaufman, who is the most prolific receiver in Missouri school history, and I know he was a tight end, but he was basically a receiver. I think he caught 47 balls for 500 yards and 5 touchdowns as a true freshman. Jared Perry had a really good freshman year, had like 37 for 500 or something like that. So, you know, could he go out and have 1,000 yards? I mean, sure, he's a really good player. He's number 4 player in the country. I suppose it's possible. He's going to start every game if he's healthy. They're going to throw him the football. But I just think, you know, receiver's a really tough position to come in and, like, be a program changer by yourself, because it's still reliant on the quarterback, still reliant on the offensive line, still reliant on other guys. And the other thing to remember, if you have a guy like Burden who is going to probably be the number one focus of defenses, maybe one of his biggest attributes is not only catching the ball, but is drawing enough coverage that, like, Towski Dove and Dominic Lovett have bigger years than you would expect. You know, so he can contribute to the passing game being a lot better without maybe having 95 catches for 1,200 yards.
Gabe DeArmond from PowerMizzou.com, thank you for the time, sir.
All right, guys, have a good one.
Yeah. But, I mean, he could have 1,000 yards.
You never know.
You know, I'm not going to.
Don't place artificial limits on somebody.
Right, I'm not going to shut the door on that. I'll rein in my expectations, but he could. Someone's got to.
Do they?
My expectations are my downfall. Back after this on WHB.